Joining us in the studio, it is, of course, Friday morning. It's time for the week that was, and we have got Jerry Wood, the independent member for Nelson. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie.
Good to have you in the studio, mate. We've got Ron Kelly, the president of the CLP. Good morning, Ron.
Morning, Katie.
How are you, mate?
Good, good. And how are you again?
Yeah, not too bad. We've got Nicole Manison, the deputy chief minister and also the treasurer of the Northern Territory. Good morning, Mano.
Good morning, Katie.
How
Lovely
are you?
Oh, I'm pumped up. F45 this morning. Oh, life is good.
Ready to go. Sorry,
good.
She's ready.
Oh, good.
She's
me and Tash, F45 this morning. We're great.
Look out, guys. Look out. She's firing on all pistons by the sounds of it. I like it. Now, look, there is a lot to cover off on today, but I might just start off with the news from overnight. Northern Territory police have responded to two unrelated firearm incidents overnight. Police arrested a 29-year-old man who allegedly discharged a firearm at his Humpty Doo property shortly after 6 p.m. Police had received reports of yelling from the property, and it's alleged that a shot was fired into bushland. No one was injured, luckily. Now, when police attended the property, the man dropped the firearm and drove off. After a pursuit lasting about 50 minutes, police arrested the man near where the pursuit began at the Ballinger Street property. Now, then there was a second incident. This time, a small blue Suzuki hatch has stopped in Rickards Court in Malak at about 6:15 p.m. The vehicle contained three or four males. The alleged offender has got out of the vehicle and allegedly threatened the victim with a long arm firearm. The victim has confronted the offender, who's then got back into the vehicle and left the area. The alleged offender is described as 17 to 18 years old, light-skinned Aboriginal male without a shirt and wearing blue jeans. Now, if anyone has any information which could assist with either of these incidents, you are urged to contact the police on 131 444. But I tell you what, it's obviously a real concern.
Any issue with a firearm is very concerning. Oh, I had conversations with the acting commissioner late yesterday with regards to these events. Police did a wonderful job, particularly dealing with the Humpty Doo issue, which I understand is more of a domestic disturbance. But thank you for reading that out, Katie. With regards to anybody that has information, particularly about the other offence, to make sure that they provide it to police, it's really important. But this goes to the point about why we are introducing legislation around firearm protection orders. As we know, that's currently before the scrutiny committee process. As police minister, I do not want to see firearms in the hands of the wrong people or people who have got thorough criminal histories out there. They should not be having firearms.
So what exactly is that change in legislation?
So we've looked at legislation that's been introduced down south. Yep. It means that, for example, if somebody's got an extensive criminal history where we don't think it's appropriate for them to have a firearm, that we put a firearm protection order on them to say you can't have a firearm. It gives us more powers to be able to search people that are not meant to have firearms, to make sure that they don't have firearms, or to associate with people that shouldn't have access to those firearms. So there is a range of changes there, but it is about strengthening, making sure that the people who do the right thing, no problems there whatsoever. You know, sports shooting, all those types of things, I've really got to stress that. But this is about targeting those hardened criminals that we know are out there, or people that have got an extensive criminal history, where we go, right, we don't think you're a suitable person to have access to firearms.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, though, and say that the one that's described as 17 and 18-year-olds, you've got to question how on earth they've ended up with a firearm in the first place.
I think that's a good question.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, whilst the government's introducing these changes, I'm not sure those changes are relevant to perhaps what we're talking about today. I've got a firearm. It has to be locked away in a safe.
Yep.
I have to have a reason to use it. If you haven't got a good reason to use it, then you can't keep it. So you'd have to say, you know, why have these people got a gun? Have they got a license, or have they borrowed it from someone? So it'd be interesting to see the outcome of how those people have actually firearms, because we do actually at the moment have fairly strict firearm controls.
Yeah. And I know the police are going to be out about 9:30 this morning, I think.
Yes.
It is, giving us an update on that incident. But I am concerned about the fact it seems as though we've still got a group of three or four males here who are on the loose with a firearm.
And again, this is why it's important for the public to provide any information that they can. But police have been working on this issue since last night. They've been making sure that they've been investigating it and following the leads that they've gotten. Again, if you can contribute to that information, please do.
Mano, do we know at this stage stage, is there any information to sort of suggest that these people that are still on the loose, that they're at of risk to the general public?
Police are doing a thorough job at the moment, but they're looking for these people. Anything that involves a firearm, I'm not comfortable with.
No, me either. I actually feel quite worried about it.
If someone shows it, but I don't want to create a level of panic here. Police are very professional. They're out doing their job. They're trying to find them. Please help if you can. And that's why it's important that they're doing this press conference at 9:30 to get as much information out there to the community so they can assist with their investigations.
Ron, is there anything else you want to add to it? I mean, it's quite ironic that both of these separate incidents have happened on the same evening and quite concerning as well.
Look, it's very concerning, and I'm with Jerry. I have a firearm, and the rules for me to have that are quite strict. So my biggest concern is that you've got 17, 18-year-olds driving around with a firearm. They're not doing that because, you know, of any sort of, you know, noble intent. I mean, these individuals will get caught, because I have immense confidence in our police. They do a great job. They'll round them up. But it's what happens with these people, and the investigation has to go further than just, you know, unauthorised use of a firearm. Where do they get it from? Who owns it? This needs to be stomped on, and serious consequences, because, as you said, Katie, no one deserves to live in fear that some idiot might turn up in a car and brandish a rifle in your face. I mean, this is just unacceptable.
I do wonder I don't know whether we know at this point in time, and no doubt the question's going to be answered, but was the victim in that situation in Malak known to those offenders?
And again, these are the things that police are investigating, and so I don't want to put words into the mouth of the police. They're going out at 9:30. So these will be the details that police will go through with the public.
No doubt we'll hear more about that, and we are aiming to hopefully catch up with the Northern Territory Police after 10 o'clock this morning. But I do want to take you to another story, which is on page 5 of the paper today, and it is about a quadriplegic. She's told of the terror that she felt looking into the eyes of three robbers as they confronted her in bed with a crowbar. Now, Natasha Amick has spoken to this poor woman, and basically Susie Wood has said that she woke up to the sound of clanging in the kitchen when three masked youths broke into her home at about 2 o'clock on Wednesday. They slowly opened her bedroom door and poked their heads in. She said, "I honestly thought it was a ghost. They covered their faces with shirts so I could only see their eyes. They looked at me, saw I was disabled and alone, so they came right in and turned the light on and started taking my things." I don't think that it gets any lower than stealing and breaking into the home of somebody who's quadriplegic. It is disgusting.
Lowest of the low. This is one story that's just absolutely outraged me. How can somebody in their right mind go into somebody's house and see that they have got a disability and they're vulnerable and they can't fight back and do that to them? Like, it's just disgraceful. It makes you so angry. And I know that our police are working very, very hard to catch up with these people that have committed this crime. It is absolutely horrendous. It is not acceptable. And, you know, these people need to be brought to absolute justice, because it's bad enough to go rob someone, but to do it to a vulnerable person and somebody who cannot defend themselves in that situation is just disgraceful. It just makes you go, how weak and pathetic are these people to do that to somebody in that situation?
The part that makes
cowards.
Cowards.
But unfortunately, it's not an isolated incident of older people, wheelchairs or mobility scooters, or just walking about their own business, that this seems to be the soft touch. But to do that and to show no fear, because they turned the light on and then ransacked the house in front of the terror that woman would have gone through. Now, again, I'm pretty confident that these offenders will be rounded up. And there are some cases, reiterate some of the comments of Treasury, there are some cases that make me very glad that I'm not a judge or a prosecutor, because to distance yourself from that sort of action. But there must be serious consequences. There must be consequences for people that do this. If there's not a reason to deprive someone's liberty for a while to make them think about what they've done, then I don't know what is. I mean, the consequences have to be real for offences. They have to be graduating, you know, in the severity. But for this bunch of cowards, you know, there seriously needs to be, you know, strong consequences for those actions.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, regardless of all the discussions we've been having about diversion, et cetera, et cetera, you need to take these people off the street. If they are going to do what I read in the paper to some lady who's, as you said, a quadriplegic, that lady lives with that for a long time. Mm. That's just not a physical issue. It is a mental issue and extremely upsetting. And I would imagine that not only is it an invasion of privacy, it would be extremely, you know, you'd nearly be in a state of shock. To some extent, like having a car accident, all of a sudden people burst into your room. I'm not saying you shouldn't do work for these people to try and turn their lives around. I'd love to know the history of how these kids have got to where they have, where they've got. Is there no conscience? Yeah. Is there no belief that I'm doing something wrong here? Oh. But regardless of that, you still have to pay the price for doing what you're doing. I think you've got to be taken off the street for a while.
The part about this story that makes my blood boil is that this woman has told the paper, I didn't know what was going through their minds. I closed my eyes and I pleaded to God to help me. He reached across my body and then took my Samsung phone. She was terrified and by the sounds of things, rightly so. She said she thought he was going to hit her or rape her. For a woman who is in a wheelchair and unable to get out of that bed, to have people inside that house, I just don't know. Like, I honestly, you really think to yourself, how on earth can any part of you think that that's an okay thing to do?
They terrorised her.
Yeah.
Terrible.
But like, it's the lowest of the low. That's how we started this conversation. It doesn't get any worse than this when it comes to, you know, people of just a very, very appalling way of conducting themselves to do this to somebody who is vulnerable.
How do you get this?
Who can't fight back. It's just so, it makes your blood boil, and I completely agree. They have to face serious consequences for doing something of this level.
So how do young people get brought up where they have got no idea what's right and wrong? I mean, most people would know that that's not only wrong, it's seriously wrong. It's an extremely terrible thing to do to someone. Isn't there a conscience that pricks you to say, we shouldn't be doing this? Yeah. But, you know, is it a sign of society that, you know, if we can get away with it, we will? I don't think you should be able to get away with it. And in this case, I think you should have to go somewhere away from society for a while. You have to pay some punishment for that sort of intrusion on someone's life.
Well, that's certainly the message we're getting quite loudly and clearly on the text line this morning. Someone's just messaged through and said, because if there was consequences for these youths, why would you be worried if nothing happens? Another person's messaged through and said, disabled lady being robbed and fearing for her life, someone will know these grubs, and they're even worse because they're protecting them. Look, I just feel as though, and we've spoken about this on so many occasions, and we can talk about it in so many different ways, but whether we want to believe it or not, there is an element of the community at the moment who don't feel worried about the consequences for their actions, and the police do a phenomenal job at being able to round them up, but somewhere we're being let down.
Can I say they should be worried about the consequences for their actions, because people will get charged. They'll go before the courts. They will go to Don Dale. They will go to the Alice Springs Correctional Facility if they do the wrong thing. And I went out and saw Strike Force Orion this week out at the Palmerston Police Station and had a look at the intensive work that they're doing, targeting some well-known young individuals in the community and those family groups as well. So there is a lot of work happening to make sure that we put more pressure on those doing the wrong thing. But also, if we can see that there are up-and-comers in the family group or kids that could go off the rails in the family group, that we get to them earlier to stop them going down the path of their older siblings as well.
Gavin's promised those two youth camp facilities. I'd love to know where they are. We know we're nearly into the fourth year of this government. Those work camps for youth, I think, are very important. They're the places we should be sending these kids away to. I'd love to know what stage they're at.
Gerry, we do have Operation Flinders that has been up and running the whole time, where kids go out to the Flinders Ranges. They go for a hike for almost 100 kilometres.
There's only girls about 80 that have been through there, isn't there?
They're not necessarily criminals, of course.
These kids have
committed a criminal offence, and I think the work facilities that you've been planning were specifically for kids like this.
So we are also working on the Barkley work camp. Mm-hmm. We're looking at another very a strong model out on a station where people will be doing some pretty serious work out there too. And we've also got some programs going out in Central Australia where people are going out bush and doing some work there.
What would you think is the appropriate consequence for young people that have done this to the quadriplegic lady?
Don Dale. That's my view.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. But I'd also be interested when they round these kids up. Oh, I shouldn't say kids because that desensitises it a bit. When they round these offenders up, be interested to know it's probably not their first strike. And, you know, how we didn't, have that graduating consequences going through that's been talked about but not really delivered. And then I'm not absolutely convinced that they might not have even known who they were going to attack because they didn't seem to hold, from what I've read in the paper, to walk into the bedroom and turn the light on. They didn't seem too feared that the person's going to get up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is, and I don't think it was their first rodeo.
It's just such
and
a shitty thing to hear, and it's just such a shitty thing to have happen. Mm. It's absolutely, like, it's quite heartbreaking, I reckon, for the whole community. And, you know, even not so long ago, we spoke to the son of a woman who had her bag taken from her in the car park at a shopping centre in North Lakes, I think it was. She was an elderly woman in her 80s. And we've also heard about the situation where the other lady had her mobility scooter stolen from her. You know, you've just got to think to yourself, do these people not have a grandma? Do they not have family members or people in their lives that that they think, I would hate to see that happen to them? You know, you've got, like, I just can't understand it. I just think if they don't suffer some pretty serious consequences, we're just going to continue to see it happen.
Yeah, you'd expect a pretty tough consequence for the level of activity that has happened there. That's just an absolute disgrace.
Look, I think I said they should be locked up, but I think I'd rather them go out bush and do some work. You've got to return something back to the community as well. You lose your freedom, but you'll also go out there and work in the community, and that's the advantage of the work camps. And that's why I'm a bit sad that they haven't actually been up and running now. But I think that you're not just wanting people to sit in a Don Dale. You've got to get them away from the community that they're involved with. You've got to get them out there in the community, other communities, showing them that they are repaying some of the wrong that they have done, and at the same time get a bit of a chance for them to start rethinking their life. But the punishment, I think, is the priority in this case, along with the other app. You just don't punish and just let them out at the end of it. You're hoping that in the end they'll start to think about what they're doing in life and hopefully not do it again. But I think there still need to be some form of retribution for what's happened.
And Jerry, we have put a huge amount of work into this space. We've got more programs than ever before that we're working through just for that, understanding that if somebody goes through a process where they go and they get locked up for a while, they spend time in Don Dale and then they go back out. It's about rightio. When you send them back to the same situation that got them into trouble in the first place, how do we work around them in that regard? So more support around that family unit and making sure that we try not to send them out and back into the situation which is the cause of their dysfunction in the first place. But another important thing will be building this new detention centre to make sure that we have got a modern facility where we can put into place better programs to get better results.
You are, of course, listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is the week that was. Plenty of people are messaging through. We're going to talk about the flights, Virgin flights. We know it is news which has disappointed a lot of Territorians. Virgin announced their changes to their permanent flights across Australia. That includes the Tiger Air cutting its Darwin to Brisbane flights. And there's been a raft of reductions in domestic routes all around Australia. But then the one that's got Territorians pretty annoyed is the change which is seeing that popular, well, Bali Darwin leg, or Darwin Bali leg, however you want to describe it. And it's the only way, really, that you can get to Bali at a reasonable time of the day, which I think is probably what's annoyed a lot of people. We sort of feel often, I think, that we're held to ransom by the airlines.
Oh, I feel your frustration, especially as a mum of young kids.
Yep.
It is a nightmare flying on red eyes with young kids. It's
hard makes me not
work.
Want to go on holidays,
no,
if I'm honest.
It is a major deterrent, I agree. So it was very disappointing to hear that. They were really popular. Everyone in town was talking about how great it was to have civilised hours to be able to fly over to Bali. So we're lobbying Virgin about the changes and certainly making it very clear that we expect good air services here in the Northern Territory. I do get disappointed, though, from time to time, because when you do see some of the flight times that we have, some of the aircraft that you get, you go, yes, we don't have the density of population, but still Territorians deserve better air services and more affordable air services. And if the airlines were serious about doing their part about developing the north as well, they'd do their bit.
It is down to bums on seats, though, isn't it? And it's hard, I suppose, when it's not commercially... when it doesn't commercially stack up for them. But I agree, there does need to be that element of making sure that you're servicing all Australians, yes, and providing options for all Australians. But I guess it's hard to make a corporate do that.
We need to... And I agree, we all want better airfares and more flights, but if it costs $100 to buy something, then you've got to pay the $100, and these companies are going broke. What we really need to do here is we've got to make that demand better. And that's investment in the things like our... horticulture and agricultural and our fisheries people to put the cargo in the planes to make these flights viable, to invest in our tourism infrastructure and products so that we get more tourists here, our business development and investment programs to have more business people in these planes, because just doing the same thing or not investing in those things, we'll continue to see airlines have a look at the Northern Territory and they'll come. We've had Malaysian Airlines, we've had Garuda, we've had Philippine Airlines, we've now had Tiger come and go, and we've got Jetstar pulling, Virgin pulling out of the Bali route. Just doing the same thing and hoping someone's going to come here to provide us a service is not going to happen. We need to invest in those things that make the Northern Territory more vibrant, and that's just not happening.
And at population growth too.
Whilst I don't travel to Bali, I haven't been to Bali, but...
You're missing out, Jerry.
Oh, sorry about that, no. I think the issue we sometimes miss is the issue for people living in remote parts of the territory.
Yeah, absolutely.
The cost of air travel is just astronomical, and people are certainly at a disadvantage. And I went to Manangaroo a couple of months ago to... umpire a game of football. I'm glad I wasn't paying the airfare. And then the day I was supposed to come back, the plane was cancelled. I actually came back with one of the local people there who drove back. And so they were telling me that the service is also unreliable. So
my mum lives in Manangreta, and very often she'll be due to get on a flight. She'll say, I'll be there in the Arvo to pick the kids up or whatever. And then she'll have to ring and say, I'm really sorry, but the flight's been cancelled, or we're now flying in tomorrow. And I don't think Manangreta's on their own. There'd be other communities in the same boat.
I certainly heard a lot of complaints, and so I think that, you know, if we're looking at the issue of people in the territory having equal opportunity, you know, I know they live far away and people say, well, that's your fault, and there's always disadvantages anywhere in Australia living remote, but some of the prices, if you have to take a family in or you have to bring a body back for a funeral, etc., all it's very, very expensive. And so when we look at, you know, we're complaining about how much it costs to go to Bali and what time to go to Bali, I think we need to keep this into perspective when it comes to just local people are being able to have air flights across the territory.
So I think we are looking at it in a raft of ways, touching on what Ron was saying about economic development and tourism. We've got our Turbocharging 2 package out. We did Turbocharging 1, which is all about new product in the tourism market, getting more bums on seats and interstate and international tourists leaving their hard-earned cash here in the territory. We've made a huge effort in that space and we've seen some positive results, but there's more to do. And of course, economic development, like as the Treasurer, my focus has been on the last 3 years has just been about diversification, and supporting those traditional strengths in our economy. How can we get more new projects here to the Territory and more new jobs here to the Territory? And we're seeing some really fantastic green shoots starting to emerge. When you have a look at the announcements by Coogee, Micro, LNG, when we're seeing NASA launching satellites now, there's a lot to be excited about going forward, onshore gas exploration and what can come of that, and remote travel. I just went to Manangreta last month. I just went out to Nurugu yesterday. It's a real challenge when you live in a remote community about getting access to transport, and that again is why it's really important too, particularly out the Central Arnhem Road. That is a critical piece of infrastructure. We've got to get that sealed because that's going to help create more access for more people across the territory in remote communities.
Well, where are you up to on that? Things like, I mean, Central Arnhem Road is a definite project. So is sealing many of the roads in the rural area that allows horticulture, agricultural production to be better advanced. But you know, there's been a lot of talk about some of those sorts of projects. So where are we actually at with investing money into productivity-based infrastructure
Absolutely.
That will deliver these benefits? I mean, we need to see that investment.
And what I will say is that this has been a point that we have gone very hard on with the federal government. Over 70% of our road network in the Northern Territory remains unsealed. If the federal government and this Morrison government are dead serious about economic development in the north, they will bring forward projects sooner, like the Central Arnhem Road, looking at the development of making sure that the Mangoes Roads money gets out faster, sooner. And the other thing, Ron, that I can't stress enough, a point of frustration, is that they come to us with some lovely national partnership agreements when it comes to roads funding. But every time they put that money in, and big buckets of roads money, it gets equalised out with the GST. So we have worked very hard to get them to try to exclude some of our roads. There's more work to do there, and we welcome any work that Gary and his team can do in that space.
Let's talk about federal funding. There has yet again been discussions about the ship lift. This time we know that it is looking as though the Northern Territory government, well, we're going to have to forge ahead regardless of whether there's funding from the federal government. We did hear from Minister Matt Canavan earlier in the week, the Minister for Northern Australia, and he said we might get an early Christmas present for the ship lift. I don't know if it's a Christmas present when it's alone.
Yes, I feel a bit the same way, Katie. I caught up with the Senator Canavan on the Melbourne Cup Day, half an hour after the race. He'd just been out watching Crocs run around,
yep.
And I'd just been to the Hibiscus to Dolly's. So anyway, we had a good chat about the ship lift. Of course, we would prefer to see this as a grant coming through from the federal government. Federal Labor had committed $300 million. We haven't got that commitment from the Morrison government. What they have said is that NAIF's having a good look at it, and with all credit to NAIF, they have had a serious look at it. They've crunched through this one pretty quickly because they can see that the economics of it stacks up. This will create hundreds of jobs in our economy every year and put hundreds of millions of dollars into our economy, and it will diversify our economy again to expand it into marine engineering and building more of a capability up here. So it's a great project. We're going ahead with it, but ideally we'd like to see the federal government, if they're serious about investing in the north and northern development, this is a good project to invest in.
I can't work out if it is a really good investment and if it is going to create those, you know, hundreds of jobs every year. I can't understand why the federal government wouldn't be keen to invest in it. But that's where I wonder where this breakdown is or why they're not keen to invest in it. When I spoke to Matt Canavan about this earlier in the week, he said that if we do end up with the Navy vessels and things being serviced here, that they would have to pay for that anyway, as in, you know, they're going to have to obviously be paying to use that ship lift. So I guess I'm just trying to wrap my head around, and I'm sure a lot of listeners are as well, why, if it's such a good investment, the federal government's not prepared to invest in it?
Well, the conversations I've had with them is that they are, looking at the NAIF, not a capital grant. I think there was a bit of politics here at the last election, frankly. But we've done the numbers. It stacks up. It's going to be good for the nation. This is a nation-building project as well, because it means it enhances the defence capabilities up here. It enhances the marine vessel industry up here and marine engineering and our capability. And it opens up the Northern Territory to more businesses being able to get work, to create new jobs, and it's going to increase the capability of our pearling fleets, our fishing fleets, our tourism operators, our oil and gas vessels, and of course defence. They're not going to have to spend days chugging away, going down the west coast or over to Queensland to get service. They'll be able to do it here.
I suppose I have some concerns. I mean, I've been following this discussion for a while, and Scott McConnell raised this issue as, you know, where are we spending our money and where's the best value for that money? And I think he was sort of saying, well, if we upgraded some of the tourist facilities in Alice Springs, I think it's the Outback Way that's been pushed from Boulia through Alice out to...
That's been getting significant funding
now,
over the years, Jerry.
I know it has, but if that was all sealed, what benefits would that bring to Central Australia and communities out back? Because whilst we talk about Darwin being the centre, I suppose, of the economy of the Northern Territory, one of the issues has been, and Scott has raised it, and I've raised it too, is how do we get more inclusive, bring people from that live in the outback into the economy, so we don't have these two levels of people: those who live in the areas like Darwin and Alice Springs, and those people that live out bush, who've got high unemployment and sometimes haven't got much of a need. You know, they can't see a reason for getting educated in some cases. So how do we get those people more into the economy? economy of the Northern Territory, and is, for instance, sealing a road from Boulia right through to Western Australia through Alice Springs, would that be something that would do more for the economy of those outback communities than having a ship lift? I'm not saying a ship lift mightn't be important, but it's a matter of where do our priorities sit.
So lots of money going to the Outback Way. Can't stress that. That's been one that I've consistently seen the federal government invest in. Lots of work that's been happening across the Plenty, across the Docker River Road and so forth. It's happening. It's happening. It's getting chipped away at. This ship lift will be a great project, like I said, for the Northern Territory and for the nation.
We're going to take a... Oh, Ron, you go.
The ship lift is something that we've supported, in fact, initiated years ago. And the problem with the ship lift, and I'm grateful to hear the Treasurer talk about how much it stacks up, is there a business case or anything that can be revealed to people? I mean, if this project was going to stack up, and I hope it does... then money can be acquired, borrowed from wherever to make it happen. So it's a bit rich. I mean, like you say, there's been a lot of politics played about this. I think the politics is continuing. It's not the feds have to do anything. The feds have to actually commit to using it, and that's the biggest thing that they can do. And if the project is going to be a goer, and I believe it is enabling infrastructure, then just get on with it.
Exactly, and that's what we are doing because we've waited too long for the Morrison government, but we have got that analysis with the Morrison government and we have got it with the NAIF.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is the week that was. We've got Jerry Wood, Ron Kelly and Nicole Madison in the studio with us this morning. Now, quite a few messages flowing through on the text line. If you'd like to text through 0418 957 369. There's one here. It says, firearms haven't changed society. Has we used the drive around with guns in a gun rack on the back window of the ute? No problem. So who's responsible for society changing the worst? The robbing of the disabled woman, for example. I reckon there's just a few typos in there. Mm-hmm. Another one, it says, it won't be Don Dale. Stop confusing reality with fact. There's another one. It says, sorry, Nicole, I'm sick of hearing the same words about how our police are doing a wonderful job. They are. The problem is that the government is not, and neither is the judicial portion. It doesn't affect you till it actually affects you. And it says here, Katie, can you please ask Nicole about the kids walking around Groot Island with spears and machetes all day, every day? There are no consequences for these perpetrators. Boot camps with ex-service personnel and elders committed to changing the culture. Another one here, it says, does anyone remember the TV version or the TV show of Brat Camp? Maybe we need to start working with some of those first-time offenders. These kids home invading are well past their apprenticeships. There's another one. There's lots here. There's one that says no point developing marine engineering without a uni to put them through. I know there's been a lot of discussion about the university and some of the courses that are being cut at the university and what impact that's going to have, especially when some of those, like the hairdressing and things like that, some of those are on our jobs list or our list of professions that we're trying to lure people to the territory to fill.
Always very concerning. I went and addressed the Chamber or AGM a few days ago, and clearly one of the hot topics there was in regards to the CDU and the changes that we've seen there through the tertiary courses, but the VET courses too. They have had ongoing funding reductions from the federal government over many years now. We will be continuing conversations with the university. It's really important that they make sure that the courses that we need to support the economy and support local businesses continue to be delivered, because we need to be able to train our own here in the Territory.
Absolutely, we've got to train our own here in the Territory, but while the federal government may have some direct involvement in the university site, VET, as we all know, is Northern Territory government responsibility. And it's the VET courses that we're talking about here that are denying our own people, our train our own, from actually getting a start. We're a small population, so we'll always have smaller classes. But this is something that the Northern Territory government needs to address. And you gave them $7 million recently. I mean, what was that for, if not for the pay for the redundancy program they're now going through?
Can I correct that, Ron? There was absolutely no redundancies that were going to be paid for through that. That was certainly to support the university. We knew that they were going through some hardships there. We do make significant contributions when it comes to VET training, but the federal government also has a large role to play in the funding of that university.
I'll stand corrected because I'm probably looking at this as an outsider looking in. I find it hard that we're going to spend millions and millions on, you know, developing the university and the CBD. The university is a Northern Territory university, and if we can't look after our own and we can't train our own, then we're going to lose more people. If we want to base our community on economic growth, then we've got to have the young people coming through that can get jobs and can help that expansion. And to see some apprentices worried that they won't be able to finish their courses, I just think is terrible. My day, we had tech colleges. And I know in John Howard's time, there was talk about putting a technical school out at Palmerston. I mean, if the university is not going to take this on, I would rather we take all that away, put a tech school out there that's independent and run these courses. And as Ron said, yeah, there will be some sport classes because we are a small community. But if we don't have those apprentices coming through and we're not able to keep that flow of people in our workforce coming through, then people will go south and looking for jobs and looking to finish off their training down there. And I think that would be very sad.
Absolutely, Jerry. That's the reason why the Country Liberal Party many years ago established the university to stop us having to send all our kids down south to get an education. And we can't now see that be unwound. I mean, we need to be able to have our kids to get an education or a trade qualification right here at home. And there really needs to be a long, hard look at where those investments are being made to ensure that we continue to provide those training opportunities.
And I agree. Like, I look at my time when I went to university. So finished my schooling at Casuarina Senior College. What I wanted to study, couldn't do it up here. Any kid that basically wanted to do engineering, wanted to become a doctor, they had to go down south. They had no other way of staying up here. The university has jumped leaps and bounds. We see far more offerings here than what used to be that when I was still at school. So it has come far. We've got to make sure we don't lose the important ground that we have made. So we do need to continue to see strong investment into the university and not treat the university like East Coast universities. That's where I get a bit worried about, because they have the advantage of a density of population, sealed roads, cheap airfares. They've got all those things. Here we don't have that advantage. So that's why I don't like it when the federal government treats the university like an East Coast or an East Coast regional university. Like they would probably classify places like the Sunshine Coast as a regional area. We know that they do in their population plans. They're classifying places like the Gold Coast as regional areas.
Not so long ago, and I was irate when I realised that when we're talking about building populations and we're talking about having people migrate to Australia and those regional numbers, and now the Gold Coast and Perth are being regarded as regional, when you're actually trying to get people to move to places like the Northern Territory, I thought, what the hell is going on here?
That was being discussed yesterday when they had Sydney. When the Prime Minister was, they had a press conference about the drought relief, but one of the issues there was how to get people back out into regional Australia, and they mentioned that there's a university at Armidale, if I'm correct. And even though there's all these other communities around there that are struggling with their economies because of the drought, because the government has put government facilities out at Armidale in the form of university, that's kept places like that alive. Now, that's, you know, I think a good way to do things. And I mean, even on Barnaby Joyce's day, wasn't he talking about removing a department from Canberra to, I think it was Tamworth or someplace in New South Wales. But whether you agree with it or not, the idea was to try and help those regions and get away from that city-centric sort of view of the world.
And we have seen, particularly over the last decade, when you look at the numbers of federal public servants here in the Northern Territory, they have declined. And that means services have declined. And we've also seen a reduction in defence personnel troops. And this is a really important strategic location for the defence of our nation. And I still struggle to wrap my head around how we could see the removal of more of those important operations here. We will continue to advocate for more federal public servants here in the Territory to stop that decline that we've seen, and also to make sure that we do have the numbers of defence personnel that we think are warranted here in the North.
You're listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is the week that was. And this morning we've got Jerry Wood, Ron Kelly and Nicole Madison in the studio. One other thing I did want to ask about is those Uluru entry prices. Well, they're set to rise. Parks Australia has flagged these new fees with tourism operators, and the cost of entering the National Park could rise by by up to 52% under these proposed changes from Parks Australia. The timing of it is pretty ordinary. I think that they've said that it hasn't gone up with inflation in the last 16 years, but the tourism operators in Central Australia are really questioning why it needs to go up so soon, November, I think it is next year, and why really it came about as quite a surprise, but also it's going to impact some of those tourism operators right from the get-go. We cover off on the big issues on a Wednesday with Damien Hale and Dave Tollner, and both said, well, maybe we need to hand back the management of the national parks to the Northern Territory government.
Well, we've certainly made it clear to the federal government that we are concerned about the timing of implementing these changes around the charges. They have to work through this really carefully with the tourism operators there, because they're the ones who will be most affected by it. We need to make sure that there would be enough time for them to appropriately change their business structures to be able to put it in place if they are going to go forward and put up the fees at the rate of which they're saying. But importantly, what we want to know and want to see is that money going back into the park and making sure that we continue ensuring that Uluru is a world-class destination that brings people to the Northern Territory. And for me, I want to see the maximum benefit of it, which is people just don't go and fly in there, that people stay in the region, go to Alice Springs and explore the magnificent Central Australian tourism assets we've got there.
Oh, I think it's absolute madness, Katie.
Yep.
Putting up the price, in a word. And I agree with the Treasurer, that this, we need product out there. You need to attract people. The airlines have changed their flights, that they no longer go to Alice Springs direct. They're flying into Canellan Airport at Uluru Kadjal National Park, and that's having a significant impact on the Alice Springs tourism operators. So we're now going to put the price up for people to go to the park. There's no additional amenity or product there. It's going to be like another Kakadu riddled with pigs and no one going to see it. I mean, this is Parks Australia running the park from Canberra. There's not a lot I always agree with my old mate Dave and Damien. They're both friends of mine. But on this one, I think we seriously have to have a look at it, because we need the development there. Sensible. I mean, not talking about ripped hair around the place, but there are so many aspects of these two iconic parks that could be developed to provide the product and the amenity, which drives more tourists here. And Parks Australia's plan is to just jack up the entry price. I mean, this is just lunacy.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's very good timing either. And I was just reading there that, I hope this is correct, it says the annual vehicle entry for Northern Territory registered vehicles will rise from $65 to
$109.
Yep. Well, I mean, it's an annual fee, but it's a very large increase. Dave and Dave Tolan did mention the issue of whether the Territory should take over those parks. And, of course, there's a long history about that. Of course, it was, you know, very big battle.
Yep.
Was around about self-government times and all that issue. About whether the Commonwealth should hang on to those parks or should be given to the Northern Territory was certainly debated well and truly then. But for us to take those over at a moment, at a time when the Territory is in fairly financial dire straits to some extent, I think would have to be taken very carefully. Dave did say, well, obviously there would have to be a package come with that, but I would think before that took place, you'd also have to talk to Aboriginal people, because that was a key issue at that time. And if the Aboriginal traditional owners say they prefer it as it is, then that's where it would stay. But there's nothing wrong with discussing it. This has certainly brought the increase in fees has brought that up. All I'm saying is that for a person driving out there, and you have to travel a long way from Melbourne or Sydney or even Darwin, you know, you do spend a lot on petrol to get there, and then when you get it with a fairly high fee, you'd say, well, I think I'll go to the McDonald Ranges, I'll go to somewhere else, a bit like when people prefer to go to Litchfield rather than go to Kakadu. And that's that's where, perhaps they're going to start to lose people going out there.
So to me, ownership's not the issue. It's certainly not at the top of my list of issues with the park, but it's about, okay, rightio, if you're going to do this, make sure it is sensible. Make sure you give it enough time and a good, decent lead-in. to work with your tourism operators and make sure that you get good value for money out of whatever you're charging people, and that we do see the park further enhanced.
Well, we are going to have to wrap up for the morning. It's just a couple of moments away from 10 o'clock. Always good to have you all on the week that was. Jerry Wood, the independent member for Nelson, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Katie. And there's Southern District's men's and women's football teams playing at down at Fred's Pass this weekend, I think on Sunday.
Oh, big weekend of footy, no doubt about it. Ron Kelly, president of the CLP, good to catch up with you today, Ron.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Katie, and to my fellow panellists.
Oh, thanks for joining us. Nicole Madison, the Treasurer of the Northern Territory and Deputy Chief Minister.
It would be remiss of me not to use your show to plug one of my events,
yes,
Katie.
Yes, go for it. What is it?
Next Wednesday, I'm having this great event with Lauren Moss and Nari Arkick called Welcoming the Babies. And so if you've got a baby under 12 months, or if you're pregnant, about to have a baby, if you've got a grandchild, you're a carer, auntie and uncle, come along to Tracy Village Club next Wednesday, 10 to 12. We've got about 12 different stall holders with information about, you know, water safety, the child health nurses. We've got baby businesses, buy some cloth nappies, play groups, childcare centres. So it's just a really fun 2-hour morning tea for information about your family, your baby, and all the cool things you can do around Darwin and the support you can get.
Good stuff. I was never organised enough to do cloth nappies.
I am hopeless.
And Kate, there's a portraits of senior Territorians, I think, is open today in Parliament House.
Oh,
in the library, I think it is.
Oh, good stuff. Oh, well, lovely to have you all in the studio this morning. Thanks so much for your time.